detail of life is all recorded. The things that are not seen by the human eye will be taken account of in that coming day. Every labor of love will all be analyzed and rewarded. Inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of these, the least of my disciples, ye have done it unto me. I'm not going to read extensively because to cover the life of Moses would be a tremendous difficulty to do in so many minutes. And if I see you all sleeping, I will close in prayer. And of course, a possibility is, if you feel like going to sleep, raise your hand before you do it. And then I can always give you a little water. I don't believe in infant sprinkling, but I could sprinkle. Hebrews chapter 11, please. I know it's tiresome 2 days, you know, and I realize that. Patience to the saints and that. Thank you very much. Hebrews chapter 11, and we're going to read at verse number 23. By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment or decree. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming, reckoning, counting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured his seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians essaying to do were drowned, and so forth. We want to read a verse, please, in Deuteronomy. And toward the last of Deuteronomy, please. And we're going to read verse number 1 of chapter 34. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo, to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead and so forth. And verse number 5, so Moses the servant of the Lord died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. Buried in the valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor, but no man knoweth of his sepulchre unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. The children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days, the days of weeping and mourning, for Moses were ended, and so forth. Verse number 10, and there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, and all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land. And in all that mighty, and in all that mighty hand, and in all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. And it was just one verse in Joshua 1, chapter 1, just look down the page, if it's still in the same page, Joshua is the end of Deuteronomy. Verse 2, Moses, my servant, is dead. You know, preachers are peculiar people, I think some, And sometimes we have all our lessons jotted down, our notes, as we call them. But usually before the meeting's over, we forgot to look at our notes. And then we go home and say, oh my dear, I missed one more. But that's the way it is. That's the way it is. I want to look at this man because we have on it the potential. Sir Winston Churchill said, I heard him speak, by the way, and I'm not old. I was only a lad of 9 summers, born in 1936. War ended in 45. And the voice of Sir Winston Churchill came over the loudspeakers in the town where I was living. Little town between Northern and Southern Ireland. All the schools were off that day. And all the people come out, you didn't matter whether you were Catholic or Protestant, black or white, doesn't matter race, color, culture, or anything. They all come out, and I was there among them. Little lad, don't remember too much. But I know the people were elated, and there was tremendous orations, and scarves were thrown up in the air, and hats were taken off and flung around, and someone danced a wee jig, and so forth. And then the voice come over of Sir Winston Churchill, and you could have heard a pin drop. And then that voice come. You know, he had a voice that's peculiar. He had a difficulty with his voice in early times, a lisp and so forth, and he learned how to handle that lisp, and people just sat and listened in awe. You know, we shall fight in the land and in the sea and in the mountains and the streets and in the cities and in the villages. We'll fight to the last man. No surrender. Yeah, wonderful word. No wonder, boy, I tell you, that put some oomph into the generation. But he came over and I heard that, and all I do know, when he got the sign of victory, come over, and the Allies had won the battle, and freedom was brought again to Europe, to America. As soon as he stopped, that's when the whole thing went into, what would you call, a real fanfare. And everybody jumped for joy. You don't hear me yet. Everybody jumped for joy and gladness of heart. And what was it? I heard his voice. And he said, Sir Winston Churchill said, when he was talking to Ben Gurion, the first president of the, I'm giving you a wee history here, first president of Israel, and he met him, and they talked together, and Ben Gurion appreciated Sir Winston Churchill. A book worth reading by you readers of history. Get Churchill and the Jews. Don't pay the big price in for it. Go through Amazon or some other place and you'll get it much cheaper. But it's called Churchill and the Jews. And it shows you a picture of him with Ben Gurion, that little prime minister first in Israel when they were recognized as a nation. And you know, he told them and gave them a nice little book. As he said, the greatest leader of all time, Moses. So when we're looking at the life of Moses, I put alongside a potential, because I'll tell you this, in the divine standpoint, God knew all the pathway. I understand all that. But in the human element of things, after all, we must stand back in absolute and total amazement that in the decree of the greatest empire then in existence, the empire of Egypt, and under the Pharaoh with all his despotic influence and all his power and pomp and military might. And the decree was that all the male children should be slain and cast into the river. Everyone that was of a Jewish origin All children under two. Oh, my friend. And yet here's a couple, oh, a godly couple, both Levite, both of the tribe of Levi. And they decided, they had already one child. And they decided that we're going to have another baby. Yeah. The man says, well, I mean, if we have another baby and it is a boy, we won't have him very long. He's going to be cast into the death sentence on him. But those two were, listen, there's something about, oh, I feel so far short here. There's something about parents. You know, thank God for every, I don't care where they are, every couple that has an exercise about their family. You know, I'm going to tell you something. This is just by the way. Revivals always start in the family. Then they branch out. If the devil can crack the family, if the devil can destroy what God has instituted, the joy of family life. They had the child. It does say, according to another translation, which I will quote, it does say when the child was born, he was fair or lovely. And when I went to see my first child, I'll never forget, and there was about a dozen pink and blue I didn't know which to pick, and I went and then looked at them all, and I said, they all look like we, oh, shouldn't use that word. Anybody sophisticated here, talk to me afterwards if I use their own. They all look like little monkeys. I mean, they were all, you know. And I said, is this my, and yet mum, loveliest little child. Oh, and just like a little angel. Yeah. Yeah. But Moses, the parents saw in that child beyond the skin. That's what you want to get. That they saw in that child a potential, and Darby transition helps, fair to God. That when I brought that child into the world, responsible as a parent and a believer in Christ, I have an accountability and a responsibility to hand that child back to God. Oh, some say, but you have to wait till they're saved. No, you don't have to wait till they're saved. If there's any burden or exercise at all. I marvel at I could get on an awful tangent here. When I think of those people that talk about abortion and stuff like that, I can't understand their thinking, but I'm not going to get on that. All I'm going to say is, when I think of a child so fearfully and wonderfully made, that's what he said in the Psalms, even in the womb. When your child was born, maybe I was a wee bit too inquisitive. Only I went in to see one of my children born. When I saw the first one born and saw what happened, I said, I'm not coming back here ever. Anyway, God bless our wives. They fill our hives with little bees and honey. Mend their socks and give us shocks on how to spend our money. So, I just want to keep us all alive here. I don't want you to sleep on me. I tell you, I want to say this. Every mother has a tremendous burden, even more than a father, when it comes to the child. Do you know, my wife is, I say I'm concerned about all my children, even those that are saved, and the grandchildren. Yes, I am. But I'll tell you something, if you want to touch a deeper chord than a man's heart, touch a woman's. And we who are husbands ought to recognize that. Sometimes I fail there. What she, like, does she have to get all upset about that? Then I stop. She's the one that went through the trouble. She's the one who went through the pain. We're kind of free. I think it makes me more sensitive to, as I grow, to love my wife more. I hope that's the way it is with us all. When those two had that little child, they could see it was fair to God. And what potential lay in that? Look, it doesn't look like anything, because after all, things look bad. And of course, there's going to be the death sentence upon it right from birth. That's why they hid it for 3 months. You will notice that the book of Acts is it. Now, I'm not just sure. I'll have to get my memory going here. Acts tells us that it's in the father's house. And of course, Exodus is the mother that's in view. And of course, Hebrews brings in the parents. You know? See, there's a unity in bringing in a family. And ought to be that. And it seems amazing to me, these people by faith, that's the secret. You know something? Let me tell you a little story very quickly. I'm still young, 71. When I was only 2, and I hear people say, I remember when I was 2 years old. I said, boy, you were born with a ton of intelligence. I don't remember when I was 2, I'll tell you that. But anyway, some of them are really brilliant people, and they remember when they were 2. And when Mum told them a story and all. And boys, I think they're wonderful people. I'm going to be in heaven with them too. But they were... Well, anyway. I was given up completely. Yeah. Doctor came into our house and he looked at this little frail little Albert. What did they ever give me all those names for? Albert Edward William. One word's enough for me. Albert. Anyway, when the doctor came in and looked at this little Albert, he said to Mom and Dad, he says, I have to tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Hall, I have to be honest. And the doctor, and you want it honest, he said, Albert's not going to make it to the morning. My parents were exercise people. My mother was a godly mother. Very like Moses. She went up into the little bedroom. She had her own little time of prayer. Every mother has that. It's all right for parents to pray together. But there's something about a godly mother you will find. You'll find them in their own closet. Yeah. They have their own secret times. My mother went up into her bedroom and into her bound on her knees and she prayed for quite a while. I don't know how long. I can't be sure of that, so I'll be guessing. And my father, he was doctoring me, putting on, they tried every remedy under the sun to get my temperature down, and the wet blankets and so forth, and all that they could, and they got herbal treatments and all that sort of stuff, plus the doctors. But the doctor said, when she was on her knees, I'm not just sure of the verse, so I'm going to quote because it was something similar. On her knees, she was praying, Lord, Albert's sick. The doctor says he's not going to do. But Father, you're in control. Just spare him. Save him. And use him for thy glory. Hand him back to you, Lord. But don't let him die. So you've got to bear something like this. Now, I am not just exactly, but I think it was something, he shall not die but live. And declare the wonderful works of God. She came down to her husband Richard and said, I think it's all right. I believe Albert's going to make it through. When it came into the dawn of a new day, the doctor arrived quite early in the morning and he came in just to pay the visit. And possibly with a little note of sympathy in his heart. And when he saw me, little me, he said, something has happened. The temperatures are way down. And he said, there must be another power at work. Yes, friend. The power of the Almighty. Is anything too hard for the Lord? And of course, well, I must have made it for me here. But you know, I'm going to tell you something. Faith is always tested. By faith, Moses. By faith, Moses. And then you've got all that. I got into the wrong path. I'm not going into that. When I stood at a certain place, my mother and the oldest girl in the family, my mother said to her, that's one time when faith wavers. We all have that. Don't think it's all smooth. I tell you, Mum said to her daughter, I wonder, was I in the mind of God asking God to spare him and save him? Look at him now. Someone like that going through a little time. Could I give you a little encouragement? Still cling to God. When I got over 20 years of age, this isn't a gospel meeting, but I could make it one. When I got over 20 years of age, I'll never forget the night on the roadside. God, I'll never forget it. God was rich in mercy. Yes, friend, coming from a poker school, and on Sunday morning at around 11 o'clock, threw the cards down on the table. Billy Foster said, do you want some money? And he put his hand in his pocket, pulled out the wallet, and he showed me his money. He says, he needs some more money. I said, no, Billy, no, no. I said, look, boys, I might as well tell you right now, I won't be back here. They looked at me and said, anything wrong? I said, no, I've got something to attend to. It's urgent. And of course I left, never to go back. You know, God's salvation is a wonderful, a liberating, emancipating, glorious, blessed. Can I get any more words? Can you give me some? Great, grand, glorious, unsurpassed, unparalleled. Any more words? Do you have them? My friend, wonderful to be saved. Well, I'll tell you this. I'm not wasting time, but I'll tell you. This isn't... That's okay. I walked up the road that night. Sunday night, with my brother's overcoat on. Couldn't afford one. Hadn't got a watch, so couldn't tell you the time I got saved. But it was in the night. 10 o'clock to 11. And as I went up there, there was a little portable hall. Two men preaching their heart out to Christians. About 10 of Christians. Boys, that's hard. Tough going. I would say. Friday night come, and Brother Kennedy said to Brother Graham, look, we're seeing nothing here. Let's make Friday night a prayer meeting instead of preaching. They're all Christians here anyway, nine of them. And they got down and prayed, and after they prayed, Brother Kennedy got up and opened his Bible, and he read about Peter's release from prison. Church prayer. And he said in his own imitable way, he said, look, he said, God's not confined to this little building to save souls. He said, why don't we open the windows? And maybe somebody passing, maybe. God can save outside the building. I didn't know that till about 15 years ago. And I'm saved 50 years. I was at a conference and the man came up and told me. That was Friday night before I got saved on the Sunday night. This is what happened in that little hall. And when I'm walking up the road, quoting scriptures and quoting scriptures and quoting scriptures and telling God of my sin and terrified to meet God as I was and background coming up and looming before me, condemning me. Desperately wanted to be saved. I even said, I'll give my right arm. Well, God didn't want my right arm. Can't bargain with God. But that's how it felt. And as I heard singing, toward the end of the meeting it must have been, for I didn't go inside. I walked over and I listened to an open window. Christ receiveth sinful men. Even me with all my sin, purged from every spot and stain, heaven with him, I'll enter in, sing it o'er and o'er again. Christ receiveth sinful men, even me with all my sin. I said, oh God, I would give anything to know that Christ would receive Albert Howell with all his guilty, sinful past. I know he received my mother. I know he received my father. I know he received my brothers and sisters and friends and relatives. But would he receive me? Then that come to me, you know, privilege is a great thing, but boy, sometimes it can knock you for a loop. Somebody out of the raw doesn't even think the way we think. Well, I thought I heard them say, the old preachers, when they hammered and hammered and hammered and preached, it's not in emotions and it's not in feelings and it's not a light in the sky and it's not... So I said to myself, well, if it's not a light and if it's not a feeling and if it's not an emotion, what is it? What is it? I mean, how do they know they're saved? They say they're saved and they're sure of it. And my mother is a bright testimony. I always wanted to have what you had. And they tell me that it's coming back to me. Well, this is where my frustration. Till I walked on up the road and turned and stepped between two pillars of an old schoolhouse. And I said, Lord, here I am. I know John 3:16. I know John 5:24. I know Romans 10:9. I know Isaiah 53:5-6. I know Romans 5:8. I know 1 Peter 1:23. And I know 1 Peter 3:18. And they're all coming flooding back to me, but I can't see a thing. And just I said, oh God, I'm in the dark. I want you to get this. Oh God, I'm in the dark and I can't see any way out. Just like that. Well, that's why Christ died. Died for your sins. What else do you want? And right there I said, well, thank God. If he died for my sins, I'm going to heaven. I've trusted him as my personal Savior. And right on that road, on that spot, in a moment of time, I understood for the first, I knew Christ died for sinners. Brought up with that, attacks in the wall that I got at Sunday school, at Bibles with the Sunday school teacher's name in them. But all that night, I think I could have summed it up if I had thought of the hymn, but I didn't. It was for me. Yes, all for me. My chains fell off. And I was free. I rose and followed him. My friend, that happened. Mother's prayer was answered. Here we are in these meetings. I went a wee bit a long way round. Here we are in these meetings, soon to disperse. And here, you have families and you have those that are burdening your heart. What I'm trying to say, and why I'm saying that is, try by God's grace to keep your confidence firm in the Word of God and in the God that you've trusted, that those things that seem so adverse and so obscure and so far away and nothing has happened. God is still on the throne. And when Moses was born with the empire in power, with the pharaohs with their ruthless reign,
A child is born. Did you notice in the record of Moses, and I didn't go over it all, did you notice that in the record of Moses historically, the simple things that were used? Midwives. A babe in a basket. A tear. A little sister Miriam. All seem to be so insignificant. But in the estimation of God, those were the greatest things that happened in the empire. See, friend, the greatest thing in our world is not striving to be something. The greatest thing in our world is to prove God in those little details of life. How wonderful. I stand amazed when I read Exodus chapter 1 and 2. And then she put him in a basket. The last kiss she put on the cheek of that little babe Moses means drawn out of the water. And when she put a kiss on that child's cheek and closed that little basket or tucked it in and set it in the River Nile, and no doubt she did it by faith that the God that hurled the worlds into existence as the breath of Pharaoh in his hand and can control every movement with regard to a babe in a basket. That's the God we have trusted. Yeah. Never let go of that. Never let go of that. And of course, along comes Pharaoh's daughter. You know, the child's weeping at the right time. Sometimes they don't when you're meeting. Sometimes they can weep at the wrong time and start to cry at the wrong time. But we have to put up with that and say, well, as Mr. Ramsey said, it's good to hear a child's voice, but some places are so dead, there's nothing. So, I mean, his father said that. I don't know whether, he maybe would say that too. You know, just to hear a child cry, at least there's some ruffle and some rustle. You know, sometimes you go to a place and it's as dead as a doornail and what, just like the seat here, you just don't answer. Can you talk to me? No. So when a child cries, you say, hallelujah. I don't say that, but I mean, yeah. There's life. There's some life going around. And of course, boy, I tell you, she come at the right time, at the right spot. I know the old story, and you hear it so often from our preachers, that didn't put it too far out and all this sort of thing. That's okay. That's good teaching and everything else. You read that in the books. The point I want to get is the timing. When he was born, where he was hidden, again where he was hidden, again Miriam at the banks, again the timing of Pharaoh's daughter coming down to watch. If there was a little covering in the basket, I don't know whether there was or not. I forget what this is like here. No, it's just the wee blankets. The wee blankets. Well, whether it's the blankets or whether it was a little cover, I can almost see Pharaoh's daughter. Tears is coming down. God, who controls the universe, controls the tears of a child and controls the heart of Pharaoh's daughter. And the timing just synchronizes absolutely to perfection that the heart of the greatest king's daughter was touched to preserve a child. I think that's wonderful. I think that's amazing. To me, I'm thrilled at that. I say, that's the God Albert Hull trusted 50 years ago. He's still the same. He doesn't know any change. We can still depend on him. We can still cleave to him in the circumstances, adverse or otherwise, of life. He's still in control. And then she said, get a nurse. See the timing? Get a nurse for it. And of course, little Miriam's right on target. God bless the little ones. You know, God can use the little ones. Don't underestimate a little one. We were having meetings there with Bill Bingham in the tent there a couple of summers ago in near Amherst. And, of course, there's a little James there. Got saved, young little fella, you know. And small. He didn't grow too tall, but he's a nice little fella. And we happened to say in the platform, you know, that the greatest professor in Harvard University or some of the great universities of earth, if they're not saved, a child of 7, 8 knows far more spiritually in light of eternity than that professor if he's unsaved. So after the meeting, we're all in wee clumps here talking. And little James is there, and his grandmother's there, and his mother, and his big brother's there, not saved. And wee James, all of a sudden, said, you know something? I know more than my brother. He says, he's not saved, and I'm saved, and I'm only 7, and I know more than him. Yeah. I thought it was sweet of him to say it. You know, friend, I tell you, don't underestimate the potential in a child. Don't sit on them. Don't disregard them. Bring them under your wing. Do all you can to encourage them. I was somewhere recently and they bickered and bickered and bickered. Why do we bicker? Well, it's the human nature. How old should they be? They have to be 16 before they go into the waters. Yeah, I'm only saying that. I'm saying to myself, say, Mr. Hull, what do you think? I says, I hardly know what to think after you're all talking here. But we baptize them on the confession of their faith. Don't underestimate. I know wisdom. I know carefulness and all that. We all know that. You know that I'm sane enough to understand all that. I tell you, be careful handling a child. Miriam comes along and she gets the mother. See that? And the mother's very willing to be the nurse of her own little babe that was once hidden in the house, now in a basket, now in Pharaoh's arms, Pharaoh's daughter's arms, now from that put into the hands of a nurse, which is his mother. Let me get this. The training of a Moses by a mother in those formative years paid dividends in light of eternity. Because this man now is brought up, I want you to get a hold of it. This man now is brought up, is that the time? Oh, dear, that time. This is brought up in the luxury of a palace. We would call it, he was fed with a what? Silver spoon. He had those that looked after him as a little boy in the palace, and oh, don't let him trip or don't let him hurt his leg. Watch every movement. We are going to groom this boy. We're going to groom him. And we're going to groom him for the highest position in the empire. You know, that's what the world wants with young people. Groom them for the world. But you know, friend, I think Moses never forgot, excuse me for illustration here, Moses never forgot whispering in his ear, thunder in his heart, as he's moving amidst the palace and growing and seeing the pleasures and the treasures of Egypt and all at his fingertips, all is going to be his. I think thundering in his ear was, Moses, remember, you're linked to that people that's down there in the brick kilns. You belong to them. You're a Jew. You're a Hebrew. Don't forget it. You're not an Egyptian. And I think that man went through 40 years he was there. And you know, he was brought up in the university. He was. He had the highest intelligence of academics. And he had everything. Imagine. Imagine, millions at his fingertips. Treasures and pleasures and everything. I think every time, I'm not near that window, I'd look out. Every time he'd look out of the window and he'd see, Ooh. Whip after whip coming down on us. I can hear them. They're my people. They're my people. I belong to them. And then he's back in the palace, and now he's sitting down at a nine, what do they call that? When you go to a restaurant, they give you five, what is it? What do you call that? You know, there's a three-course meal, and then there's a five-course, and then there's, I don't, some of them have an endless course, but I think to Moses, nine courses probably set on for him, boy. And after looking out and seeing his fellow men under the whip and broken and bleeding and working and toiling and suffering and sweating and agony, he's now sitting down to a big thing. I'm probably going to sit down to that big meal and say, they're starving out there. They're God's people. I belong to them. I like it. When he's come to years, I want to close with this. When he was come to years, I like it. He chose rather. You know something? You can't push things down a believer's throat and just say, you got to be this. Listen, life is made up of choices. Life is made up of crossroads. Life is made up of those choices you're going to make. Moses made a wise choice. He chose rather to suffer. To suffer. Instead of pleasures, he was willing to be persecuted. Instead of plenty, he was willing to go to poverty. Instead of facing the glories of the greatest empire in the world, he turned his back and walked out into the gloominess of a people that was suffering. By faith. Young girl, listen. Listen. Young girl, I'll tell you one of my little advice to young boys and young is this. Keep in with those people who are called Christians. There may not be all that you expect. When I first got saved, I thought they were all angels. But I've discovered since they're not. But I tell you, even the worst of them, I love them. Because it's one of the marks of one going to heaven. By this, shall all men know that you're my disciples, if you have loved one to another. And so, Moses makes the wise choosing rather to suffer, esteeming the reproach of Christ, greater riches, and all the treasures of Egypt, for he respect unto the recompense. He put the telescope to his eyes. He had been looking at the cauldron of suffering of his fellow men in Egypt. And he lifts the telescope and he looks into the distance and he said, you know, I'm going for what counts for eternity. Now, I'm just going to close with this because time has fled. If you go to the Psalms, the book of the Psalms, I think if you want to study it a little, I think there are seven references in the Psalms to this man who made that choice, who absolutely stood against an Egyptian world, moved out, became the deliverer of the nation, brought them out of Egypt, traveled through the wilderness, and finally Joshua took them into the land. That's a story in itself. Moses is linked to rivers and he's linked to mountains. You'll find that if you go carefully through his history. All I want to say in closing is this. If I look at the Psalms, and if the Psalms are unfolded to us, you'll find that Moses is called the babe, the man in the palace, but the man that chooses wisely. He's called the man of God. Secondly, you're going to find in the book of the Psalms, he's called Moses my servant. That's another psalm. You'll find another one, he's called the shepherd. What titles to him? From a babe to an obscurity and born in slavery. He's also called my chosen one in the Psalms. I'll tell you another one, and I'll leave it there. He's called a priest, along with Aaron. The man that makes, or the boy or girl that makes the right choice,
They will be given. They will be given a heritage that's eternal. Moses left us a legacy. And we're sitting here today enjoying what he left. I just leave him on the mount for a moment. Ah, yes, they departed from the land, but one day he got a wee preview of the coming millennial glory on the Mount of Transfiguration. And this man goes down in the record of Holy Scripture. You know, you ever think that, I'm going to read my, now I never hardly looked at that, that's what it is. You know, if you read certain people, you could, I don't know what we've put over Tom here, or over John here, or over Jeff here, or over Mr. So-and-so here. I don't know what we would sum up. But you know, there's a book out which is very interesting. And I'll tell you what it is. As a classic, sometime I'll take it up. It's Hudson Taylor. He was noted for an exchange life. That is, he exchanged from one thing to another. That's what became a mighty man. It said that John Bunyan, his was an unchained life. He was brought into liberty. That's why we've got Pilgrim's Progress and so forth. And then we read about Amy Carmichael. She had a known to be a radiant life. But I want to get one. I can give you another few, but I like, well, I'd love to give you three more. But there's one called Mary Slessor. Did you ever read about Mary Slessor? Did anyone here ever read about Mary Slessor? You never read about Mary Slessor? What's her name? Give me your address. Oh, got your address. I know she wasn't among us. You know, some people, oh dear, something. Mary Slessor. Hers was a selfless life. She went to darkest Africa from a drunken home in Aberdeen. Bullied in the streets. Trusted Christ at 17. And when the bullies gathered round her with their knives, in their awful wickedness and lewdness, she stood firm for Christ in Aberdeen. And the biggest bully said, "This girl we're going to protect." That's because she took a stand for Christ. She left and went to darkest Africa. Let me tell you, a life lived for God will pay eternal dividends. Went to the worst tribe, into the worst chief. Saved orphans from being burned alive or drowned. Had about 80 of them. Saw over 1,000 natives saved. When she was buried, and they were taking her down to her little cemetery among the people that she loved. 1,000 gathered. And 6 chiefs carried her casket. Buried the remains of Mary's. Life.